That's one that has to be one of the hardest things. I wish that I could go away and deal with this on my own, in isolation. But you can't. I'm so dependent on everyone around me, both physically and emotionally. I need help every minute of every day, practically. And, I need Joe. I couldn't do this without Joe. I need my mum. I couldn't do it without her. I need my friends to keep me smiling, keep me laughing, keep me, that's the thing. It takes such a horrible toll on not just the individual that has the disease, but the hundreds of people around them, and all those that, it's those that you care for most that are going to be hurt most in the end. Because one day I'm going to be gone. And to think of the pain and the suffering that I'm going to cause through something that is not my choice, it kills. It really just, you can't not think about that. It's a horrible thing.
And do you and Joe talk about that, or is it something that's sort of always in the background, but you just sort of think, well, let's not go there?
I think me and Joe have been very honest, open, frank. I think when we've had to deal with such a massive, I was given a death sentence. I was given a really bleak prognosis. I was told I had a disease and it was going to kill me. So we've been through a lot, and it's taken a huge toll on my body physically. And Joe's been there all the way through, and I'm not the kind of person that sits quietly. Neither is Joe. We both just get things off our chest and speak honestly and openly. I think that's the best thing for it.
Have you got friends and family who find it difficult to talk about?
Yeah. And then you just don't go there. You respect their You respect them and
Yeah.
their sort of their way of dealing and coping with it all. And yeah, there's one friend, and he gets upset if I make jokes about my own funeral and things, which is my way with dealing and coping and just making light of things. Because good grief, we're all going to die at some point, and we're all going to have a funeral, and gotta be, I think sometimes for me, black humour and just darker thoughts that I should maybe keep inside, I just make joke and make light of, but not everybody appreciates it.
But it's something you think about, sort of the planning a funeral.
Yeah. When you've been given a diagnosis like this, there's a temptation to wallow in it and to, most days something happens and I'm reminded that my time is coming, and it's this progression. Things are always getting worse. And one day my breathing is going to get so bad that I can't keep my body alive. And I know that, and every day I'm reminded of that as I struggle that little bit more. I'm still here. And let's not dwell on the negatives. Let's focus on what I can do, not what I can't do. There's so much I can do. I can still get out and about. I can still walk. Well, not walk, but get out and about, and as if I'm going for a walk. I can go to the pub with my pals. I can have a laugh. I can, I drink a pint through a straw. It's weird, but I can do it. And we were just through seeing my niece and nephew at the weekend. Just two absolute little bundles of joy that just bring us so much happiness. And
Do you think they understand?
they know that Uncle Gordon's different. I caught my little nephew a couple of weeks ago just standing staring at my wheelchair, something that he'd never done before. He'd always just accepted that's Uncle Gordon, that's how he comes. But I think as he gets older, it's going to dawn on him, oh, Daddy's not like that. Oh, no, none of my friends are like that. That's strange. Uncle Gordon's different, but there's something wonderful about the sort of blank canvas that kids come to disability with. They don't have any preconceptions or any bias or any you know, nasty, poisonous views about who disabled people are or how they should be treated. It's just, that's who I am. That's his uncle. I'm Uncle Gordon. And he goes on his bike and I go on my wheelchair and we have races. He always wins, but... And I managed to mangle my wheelchair. I managed to break my wheelchair, getting a little bit too into it. But that happens, you know, that's life. And we just have, you know, I can't throw him around and put him on my shoulders and take him for walks. But we have, we can, you know, we do other things. We have races, you know. It's just a different relationship because it has to be a different relationship.
What has all of this taught you about the system and how it copes with people with MND?
Mm-hmm.
Or doesn't.
I think in Scotland we've made massive progress. We've doubled the number of specialist MND nurses here in Scotland, which is an amazing, amazing achievement. The thing I'm... You know, I think the changes to the disability system is, you know, they are nasty, cruel changes, and they are going to impact on lives of people who are genuinely ill, genuinely disabled, and are some of the most vulnerable people in our country. But things can change, and if people come together and people voice concerns and people speak up for the less able, the more vulnerable, then things can change.
But are you aware of what you personally have changed, certainly in opinions, I think, mm-hmm. Among politicians as to how the system needs to change?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's through your campaign that a lot of these changes have happened.
Yeah. It's an amazing thing.
That is an amazing achievement for an individual to make. You're looking bashful.
I've not done it alone. It's been lots of so many friends, so many people getting behind me. It's one of the great things about my campaign is it's not been political. We've worked cross party. You know, we've united Labour and the Tories, the SNP and the Greens. So we've united people. That's what's really made this campaign stand out from others.
You've raised £500,000 for MND research. I mean, that's something you must be incredibly proud of, and something that when you started out on this, you could never have imagined that you could do that.
That's exactly right. I expected to raise a few thousand, nothing like the £500,000, you know. It's just such a silly amount of money. And that is going to do so much good. Every single penny of that is going to go towards researching a cure for motor neuron disease, you know, which is an incredible thing. And, you know, I think that's the future. We've got to invest in MND research if we're to find a cure, because I don't need to die. People with MND don't need to die. We need to change the future. We need to invest in this research so that the path for future generations is a different one.
For anyone listening to this who may be in the early stages of MND, what message would you have for them?
Keep your chin up, keep positive, and keep doing the things that you love. MND is not the end. MND is just a small part of your life. Don't let it become your life. I think it's very easy to become a 24-hour, 24/7 patient, an ill person, somebody who needs help. You have to accept help. You need help. The sooner the better. And the sooner you come to terms with the diagnosis, the better. But don't let it stop you being you and doing the things that you love.
And what would you like your friends and family to most remember about you?
I don't know. That's for them. That's a hard one, isn't it? Somebody who wasn't willing just to sit back and take the hand that was dealt. You know, somebody that was a fighter.